Do you still prefer just this morning session ending with a guided meditation?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Really, really?
Yeah.
Okay. How's the food? Is the food nice?
Yes.
Very good. Are you eating too much?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, I thought so. No rush, I'll just do it. Is there anybody not here? Put your hand up. They're all coming in. The stragglers. Mostly on that side is the Indonesians. Mostly on this side is the Hong Kong. You can tell who keeps the time best. You Hong Kongers. Anyway. So who's the best meditators? So Indonesia or Hong Kong? Teddy bear, okay. So very diplomatic answer. Okay, might as well start now. And for this morning's talk, I mentioned something in the afternoon's tutor class, and I'm going to expand upon it because it's about meditation and it's about understanding what you can trust and what you can't trust. And when I told the story of the flower pot experiments and how easy it is only to see what you want to see and not see what is just too hard for you to see because it challenges you so much. And I mentioned that in meditation you learn how to be courageous so you can see some things which at first you find fearful but afterwards you find so liberating. Like the person leaving the jail, scared at first, but afterwards is so happy to be free. So the problem is what we call the five hindrances. The things which stop you getting peaceful in meditation and which also weaken your wisdom. So this is a core Buddhist teachings and it makes a lot of sense. How can we trust our senses? How can we trust our knowledge when all we do is we see what we want to see? And so much of my life I look back upon and just see how I was conditioned to like some things and not like other things. Years ago, I was invited to give a talk at a primary school on Buddhism and meditation, and usually not being sort of asking all the right questions, I didn't know what grade it was, and it was grade 1 and 2. And if you're in a class with a grade 1s and grade 2s, you can't start talking about the nature of the permanent essence being just like a stream of consciousness, like stand with it's hard enough to get that through to you guys, let alone 5 and 6 year olds. You can't talk about the Four Noble Truths or the Eightfold Path. So not having any preparation at all, there you were in front of like about 60 5 and 6 year olds and their parents in the back, and I had to teach them about the five hindrances. Simple. So, thinking on the spot, I welcomed the children, said I was a Buddhist monk, and then I said, put your hand up if you don't like rice pudding. The rice pudding, it's like a sweet dish they have in places like Australia. Hands up if you don't like rice pudding. And about 3 or 4 kids put their hand up straight away. And the other kids, the 5 and 6 year olds, looked around and saw these 3 or 4 kids with their hand up, so they put their hand up as well. And another few kids put their hand up. And in about 30 seconds, 60 kids all had their hands up. They agreed they did not like rice pudding. Okay, put your hands down. Now, put your hands up if you've ever eaten rice pudding. And only about 10 kids put their hand up. And everyone else laughed. We believe what other people tell us. If other people say, oh, this is really happy, then we perceive it as happy. We see what we want to see to fit in. And we agree with everybody else. Yeah, I don't like rice pudding. Even if you've never tasted it before, you've never eaten it. But still, all the kids agreed. And about 80% of them had never eaten rice pudding. Yeah, we don't like rice pudding. So, because of that, I taught them about hindrances. Of how we bend reality to see what we expect to see. Like in over in Melbourne, a monastery there we're creating, they've made a cookbook to raise funds, a cookbook fundraiser. So they asked me to write the introduction, the preface. So in my preface, I said a few silly jokes, like the most famous cook in Australia was Captain Cook. He found the place. And it just got worse from then on. And so I said, in the preface, I am going to supply 2 of my most well-known recipes. The first was frog soup. I told you about frog soup before, and I told you how to prepare it. Take a frog, put it in a pan of boiling water, and serve on sticky rice. That's it. Very simple. But please don't serve it to your friends. Only serve it to your enemies. And my second recipe was something which I had just about a week before I wrote the preface, or my couple of sample recipes. That was strawberry ice cream on spaghetti bolognese. But it happened, we had some spaghetti over in Bodhinyana Monastery. We also had some ice cream, and you know, you try to put it in a separate place, but it slipped off the spoon and right on top of my spaghetti. And I said that strawberry ice cream on spaghetti, just get some very delicious spaghetti, put some strawberry ice cream on top and let it melt. Do you think that's disgusting? You're just like the kids in the school. They've never eaten rice pudding, but they all agree, yeah, rice pudding is terrible. So you don't know it, so you try it. That's an example of the hindrances. You prejudge something. You know, it's not seeing the truth. You see what you want to see, what you expect to see. But I'll actually tell you, it is disgusting. It's terrible. Well, you eat all that sort of stuff as a buck. But the hindrances, in brief, wanting is a hindrance. It's a hindrance to wisdom, because you don't see what's out there. You see what you want to see. And that is so common that if I see this all the time, when people get married, they look at each other like each other are angels coming from heaven. And when they go to the lawyer to get the divorce, then they look at each other like beings from the hell realm. They just see what you want to see. Because that person was always like that. They never change. That's just who they are. That is why that great piece of advice, which I put into my first book, Opening the Door of Your Heart, when this woman, years and years ago, when she got married, her father took aside his new son-in-law. This is a father-son-in-law bonding. And he said to his daughter's new husband, "You probably think my daughter is absolutely perfect." He said, "Oh yeah, she's so charming, she's so beautiful and kind and cute and wonderful." You know how guys go on when they get along. Totally crazy. But the father said, "Yeah, that's what it's like when you get married." But after a few years, he said, "You will start to see the faults and defects in my daughter. And when you do, I want you to remember this, son-in-law. When you start to notice her faults, please remember, if she never had those defects to begin with, she'd have married someone much better than you." So we've all got our faults and defects. But when you don't want to see them, you don't. And when you're in a negative mood, that's all you see. So that is what bends the truth. We see what we want to see. And that's where all the attachment and aversion comes from. You know, just no one is perfect, no one is ugly or terrible. You know, you see, we did have a supermodel once on one of these retreats. I knew because there was more boys than usual came on my retreat. Though she was a Thai supermodel apparently, I didn't know her. But that was where we did the retreats in North Perth. And I saw all these young Thai boys, and they don't even see them in the temple. They're not on a retreat. So what are you doing here? Because of her. A supermodel came on my retreat. It's crazy. But the same thing happens. Now, man, as you know, Judy Rushforth, years ago, she said she went to Dharamsala to see His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And it's not that hard to see. You just have to put your name down, and when the opportunity comes up, you know, you can have an audience. So waiting there 4 or 5 days until her name came to the top of the list. Now, there's always meditation in the early morning. So she went down to do a bit of meditation. She was sitting there, and after 2 minutes sitting down there, she hadn't really got still yet. Some guy came and sat next to her to meditate, and totally wrecked her meditation. She looked at him. Richard Gere. No, come on, watch my back. Breathe again. So she had a very restless mind when you got Richard Gere sitting next to you. And that was a long time ago when he was handsome. He's old and ugly now, isn't he? Well, that's what happened with me. I was young and handsome, but now old and ugly. But anyway, Richard Gere, so she was very... But she had terrible meditation that morning. So anyway, it's only a guy. But you know, our defilements, our hindrances, you know, see what's not there. That's why it's our wanting and not wanting bend the truth and they disturb us. So, when you understand, those are the two main hindrances, wanting and not wanting. And because of those, that's where we get all our restlessness from. And a good example of that, somebody bangs the door when you're meditating. What happens? A lot of times people think, who banged the door? They shouldn't bang the door. I'm going to sort of find out who they are and tell Ajahn Brahm, and they'll be blacklisted so they can never come on a retreat here ever again because they disturb my meditation. And what would happen if the Buddha was actually sitting in a room like this and they banged the door just before he's about to become enlightened? We wouldn't have a Buddha now. And I'd be trying really hard. I don't have much time to come on these retreats. And these stupid people are so insensitive they can't even... Now, the sound of the door finished a long time ago. The main noise is what goes on in our head out of aversion afterwards. That is the real problem. The anger and the aura. Outside is nothing, just banging a door. It's cold. Ooh, it's cold. I'm going to die. I can't stand this sort of temperature. Oh, what am I going to get a cold. I'm going to get pneumonia. I'm going to get the flu. I'm going to freeze so much that I won't be able to move. They'll all be jammed up like icicles be coming off my nose. You can't live in such... It's not that cold, but thinking. That type of version, that does cause you problems. You know, there's this weird story. I love collecting weird stories. There was a fellow who, in the United States, he drove refrigerated trucks. And Friday afternoon, finishing work, he was cleaning inside his truck, finishing for the weekend, when a wind came from nowhere and slammed the back door of his truck shut. He couldn't open it from inside. He was locked inside. And he banged on the truck's walls from inside, but it was insulated. So it was very hard for anyone to hear him on the outside. Banging, banging, bang, he was locked inside a refrigerated truck. He soon realized, because it's the end of the working week, that he'd be in there all weekend. And no human being can survive the temperatures inside a refrigerated truck. So he soon realized that he was going to die. There's no way out. And so he had like sheets of paper in there, you know, these sort of the log or whatever it was. And so he wrote sort of, you know, his last words to his loved ones. He expected to die. And he said to make his death at least, you know, have some meaning, he described the symptoms of freezing to death as long as he could write. And he wrote them all down minute by minute or 5 minutes intervals until he could write no more. And on Monday morning when they found the truck there and, you know, no one was around, his friends opened it, easy to open from outside, and they found him dead inside. A hypothermia, frozen to death. But the weird thing was, the freezer wasn't turned on. It was totally room temperature. And all the symptoms of freezing to death were exactly as people knew what happens when you really freeze to death. Only he totally imagined that. He believed it. And he died. Weird. So if you think it's so cold in here, you're gonna die. You will. That's a great story, you know, a very tragic story. But how the mind can create even symptoms like that. So it's not cold. So just forget about it and just go inside and just meditate and don't sort of get upset or angry. Or don't get negative towards it. So that wanting and not wanting, That is what moves the mind. It agitates you. You don't have any stillness. You've always got more business to do. So first of all, this is an old story about people never find time to meditate. Always run from the being run around by the hindrances, because you have things to do. And we always say, we'll get this out of the way and then we'll meditate. And people always call that the monkey mind. However, the way that some people call the monkey mind is not the monkey mind. This is the monkey mind. In a story told to me by a Sri Lankan gentleman many years ago, in one of the big temples in Sri Lanka, it was Vesak Day, celebrating the Buddha's birth and life and final passing away. And as you all know, on the big celebrations day, there's always heaps and heaps of food. That's why they call it feast days. And of course all the animals know that. If you go to Bodhinyana Monastery, you'll see kangaroos, you'll see parrots and kookaburras, only at food time. The rest of the day they're gone. And then they don't need a bell, they don't need an alarm clock to tell them when lunch is. They all know and they're all around there. And after they've got something to eat, they're off. Animals are really smart. And you know they don't have to cook or pay or anything, they just come and eat. They're very cute. But in Sri Lanka, on those big festival days, the monkeys come. Because the monkeys think, someone is going to leave a banana or a mango somewhere and I can pick it up and steal it. So they really get, and they get the best mangoes and offer it to the monks and not the just rubbish ones, I hope. So there they were. A monkey went to the temple early in the morning to see if he can get a mango or a banana or something, dropped by one of the Buddhist devotees. And as he was hanging around in the tree waiting for a mango to steal, he heard the monk give a lecture, give a speech. And he heard the monk, he was obviously talking about meditation, because he heard this Buddhist priest talk about monkey mind. And the monkey got very interested. They're talking about me. So you know what it's like, you know, you think. So he really listened. He swung a bit close and he listened to the monk. And he was just so upset. Because this monk was saying all terrible and bad things about a monkey mind. A monkey mind is a bad mind. It's a terrible mind. It stops you being peaceful. It stops you getting enlightened. You can't get any insight. It drives you crazy sometimes, a monkey mind. And if you're a monkey and listen to that, you too would be upset. He's got no right. You know, he doesn't know what monkeys are. He's a human being. Monkey minds are okay. I'm a monkey. Now, we can't stand for this in our modern world. That's discrimination. You know, things like the World Wildlife Fund. I'm going to complain to them. This is defamation. I'm going to get a lawyer. I'm going to sue that monkey. So this monkey was really, really upset, you know, seeing all the bad words they were saying about monkeys and monkey minds being bad. So he swung into the forest. He hadn't even got a mango yet. Swung into the forest where his friends were, and he told the leader of his little troop of monkeys, "You wouldn't believe what they're saying about monkey minds. They're bad, they're terrible, they're hopeless, and oh, this is not, it's not acceptable." And all the other monks, "Yeah, it's not acceptable." They were jumping up and down. "We've got to do something about this. They can't defame us. That's libelous. They can't do that in today's world. Everybody is respected in today's world. You can't do this." And they're all jumping up and down. And that's when the head monkey said, "Yes, that monk was right. That is the monkey mind." Jumping up and down, complaining. And all the monkeys, they realized, yes. The first time in their life they realized being monkeys, they actually had a monkey mind. So they got a bit depressed. They said, "Well, what can we do about it?" And the head monkey, who'd been around a long time, said, "Well, I've been to that temple too. And the way to overcome a monkey mind is to meditate. So they all jump up and go, yeah, let's meditate. We want to meditate. Yeah, come on, meditate. But how do you meditate? And the head monkey said, well, I've seen them. They go and get a cushion to sit on. So they all went into the forest and they grabbed some leaves and grasses and put it into a nice little ball. Well, now what do? Now you sit on it. So they sat on it and the head monkey said, posture. Put your right hand over your left thumb slightly. So all these monkeys follow. Back straight, chin in, and watch your breath. And that was the first time that forest was so quiet. All the monkeys watching their breath. For about 1 minute. And then one of the monkeys put their hand up. Excuse me! Excuse me! Don't you remember we had planned to go to the nearby banana plantation? Because the owner's out in the temple. We're to steal all the bananas for lunch. And the other monkey's like, yeah, yeah, I've been thinking the same. Said the other monkey, yeah, yeah. And this monkey said, I've got an idea. Let's go to the banana plantation now. Steal all the bananas, bring them back. We won't eat them yet because it's not lunch. Just to get it out of the way. Yeah, let's do that. Get it out of the way so we don't have to think about it anymore. So they all got up from their seats, went to the banana plantation, stole lots and lots of bananas, and they brought them back to where they were meditating and put them in a big pile. Not time to eat yet. So they went back onto their meditation cushions, left paw, now right paw of the left paw, back straight, head down, watching their breath. Breathing in, breathing out. Excuse me, said another monkey. I've been thinking. Before we eat those bananas, we have to peel them first. So let's peel them so I don't need to think about it anymore. Let's get that out of the way. Yeah, I've been thinking the same, said all the other monkeys. So they all got off from their cushions, peeled all the bananas, they never ate them yet, put them in a big pile, ready for lunch. They went back onto their cushions. Right paw of the left paw, back straight, head down, watching their breath, breathing in, breathing out, breathing in. Excuse me, said another monkey. I've been thinking. This is what happens when your mind goes off into the future, when you start planning. I've been thinking, before we eat those bananas, they've already been peeled, before we eat them, we have to put them in our mouth. So let's put them in my mouth first, we won't eat them, we just put them in our mouth. To get that out of the way. So yeah, they all said, we've been thinking the same. So they got up, they put a banana each in their mouth, and as you would expect, there's always people like this. Well, a couple of monkeys put two bananas in their mouth, and there's always one puts three in. Greedy monkey. But, never ate the bananas yet, just put them in their mouth, because just get that out of the way, so they didn't need to think about it. And then they close their eyes, right paw of the left paw, thumbs touching, back straight, head down. And once all the monkeys had closed their eyes, have a guess what happened to all those bananas. They ate them all. And that was the end of their meditation. That's what happens when you start planning for the future. Let's get this out of the way and then we can meditate. That's called monkey mind. Wanting. So, when you overcome the hindrances, you don't want it at all. You're in this moment, it's here, you've arrived, what do you want? You've all worked so hard, come from overseas to come here. If you haven't come from overseas, you've come from over rivers, the Swan River, the Canning River, Honeyati, Serpentine River, Sapa River. And so it's always very difficult to come here, and now you're here. You worked so much travelling and now you're here. Now, how many of you are planning what you're going to do when you get back already? Yeah, okay, you're modest anyway, thank you. But why do you do that? That's your life, you're wasting it. So when you're here, if you don't want anything, you can actually relax here. Have you looked at this place? It's pretty good. It's not perfect. You don't have room service. You can't get breakfast in bed like you do in some hotel or something. There's no spas. But it's pretty good for a meditation retreat center. So why do you want anything more? If you can't be content here, where can you be content? So I often think like that. If you are a bit restless, ask yourself, what do I want? What do I want? And if you get it, then what? And 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 then what? That was when I was a young monk. The first couple of years as a monk, yeah, I started to think, well, you know, should I stay as a monk, still young, maybe I should leave and get a wife. And then I said, what type of wife would I like? Has to be one who doesn't argue. Has to be one who does everything I want, when I want it. Good cook, kind, never complains. And then I figured out the only woman who could fit that description would have to be an arahant, fully enlightened, with no ill will. Which meant you'd have no lust either, so what's the point? It's just like the story of the sutras. People think that, you know, the sutras are very difficult, but those are some of the ones I pick out. There's one of the sutras. There was a young man who wanted to become a monk, and his mother and dad said, no, you have to sort of, no, carry on the family business. He said, but I really want to become a monk. He said, no. You know, you've got to get married and just carry on the business for the family. And so he said, well, look, if you can get me a wife, a woman, who fulfills all my requirements, then okay, I will marry her and I won't become a monk. So he listed all his requirements for a wife. You know, beautiful, nice hair, nice figure, very good at cooking and everything. But then his last requirement, his mum and dad looked upon that and said, I don't think we can find a woman like that. So he said, great, then I have to be a monk. Okay. And that last requirement, he wanted a woman who never farted. That's in the sutras. They had a really great sense of humour in those sutras. So because he couldn't find a woman who never passed wind, he managed to become a monk. It's human beings. No one is perfect, except in our imagination. So, when it gets to the truth of the matter, even Richard Gere farts. I got it on good authority. So, what it means is that no one is actually perfect. So when we want something, sometimes say, what do you want? If you get it, then what? Then what? Then what? Now many people, they come, they want to sort of win the lottery and become rich. Would you like to win the lottery?
Yes.
You're so dumb. What do you want them to win the lottery for? You ask people who won the lottery, it's such a lot of pain and suffering. One woman, I love this little story, she won the British lottery, I think it was £41 million. Just her. £41 million. No taxes, just net gross. £41 million. What would you do with that? So the first thing she did was to buy this big mansion in Sussex somewhere, a beautiful part of the world. An idyllic mansion. She sold it within a year. That's why I read, somebody sent me the article in a newspaper magazine. It was, headline was, Honey, I Can't Find My Kids. Because what happened in this huge mansion, she was in her few rooms of the house, husband was in another wing, her son was in upstairs in one quarter of the house, huge, and daughter in another. It was such a huge mansion. She never met the people she loved. and it actually separated the whole family. They never saw each other. So she sold it at a loss and bought a tidy house so she would always see her children and her husband. They couldn't avoid her because of a small house. I thought, what a wonderful little story that was. We dream of being wealthy, but all it really does is separates us. It separates us also from the people we love, our friends. Because when they come around to see us, we don't know if they're coming around to see us, or they're coming around to see our credit card, or our bank account, get a loan for some business or whatever. So, don't try to win the lottery. It's much better to be in the middle somewhere. Just enough to pay the bills, enough to come for a treat at China Grove, but not so much that your children are waiting for you to die so they can inherit everything. So, just, what do you want? And if you get it, what would it be like? Do you want to have long life? People tell me, if you eat this food, eat that food, it adds years to your life. But at what time in your life? If they added years to your life now, when you're young and you can enjoy it, that's fair enough. But when they say it will add years to your life, it just means an extra couple of years in the old people's home. It's added on to the end of your life, when you can't really enjoy it. So, all your wants and aspirations and desires, when you look at them, so what? So what do you want?
I had read the news, the longest life of a person. You know the biggest wish of him?
Yeah.
Is to die.
Yeah, exactly.
170 years old.
170. Ugh. When's it going to end? Just like the old kids in the car. Have we arrived yet, Dad? No, another 10 years to go. Have we arrived yet? So anyway, those wanting, you can understand that stops you enjoying this moment. Four noble truths in a nutshell. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. You've struggled so much to get here. Relax and rest and enjoy this moment. Enjoy this day. If you want something more, it's just like being back in Jakarta, being back in Hong Kong, working again. It's more of the same. It's not a retreat. It's not a holiday. It's just more work. So you're here. Enjoy it. Nothing to do, nothing to achieve. You're not wanting anything. Then you find you get so peaceful. I sometimes, to prove my point, I ask meditators, can you remember some of the happiest moments of your life so far? Or even I might say the happiest moment. Yeah, it's, you know, going into the past, but this has got a purpose to it. If you recall the happiest moment of your life so far, it's a time when you didn't want anything. The people around you were the people you wanted to be with. The place you were in was good enough. There are always moments of contentment where you didn't want anything. It's called a taste of freedom. Freedom from wanting something. It's the wanting which disturbs your peace and happiness. You always want something more. So that's why it's a hindrance. That's why Ajahn Chah said, it's the wanting, it's the wind which moves your mind, like the wind moves a tree leaf. So if you can just have to be content, to let go. This is good enough in this moment. Teacher's good enough, the hall's good enough, your bed is good enough, the food is good enough. It doesn't get much better than this. Some people used to ask me about Pure Land. Said, if we practice really well, can we get reborn in a Pure Land? I said, come on, you've already practiced hard enough. This is the Pure Land. You're already here, Jarnagrove. Welcome to the Western Paradise, Western Australia. Jarnagrove, this is the Pure Land. Welcome. So, you don't aspire for anything. You're here. Relax, enjoy. And then you find you get so peaceful. When you want something, it disturbs you. There's always something more to want if you're restless. When you appreciate this moment, when you appreciate your partner, they're not the best, but you've invested so many years with them, they're good enough. So I don't want anything more. When you realize that this is good enough, you get so peaceful. When you get peaceful, you get still. When you get still, wow, your energies get so strong, your mindfulness gets really great, you get so happy, and you realize the hindrances have been overcome. Because you've got powerful mindfulness, now you can see things. So wanting is the biggest hindrance. The not wanting, the ill will, it's just another type of wanting. I don't want this. I want something more. So always be careful. When I teach these stages of meditation, it's a very dangerous thing to teach. We have to teach it. But always remember, don't want these stages of meditation. Don't want to be peaceful. Don't want nimittas or jhanas. If you want those things, you just put this big hindrance in there. Just happy to be here. In this moment, this is good enough. And you'll find you get so peaceful, so still. All these states which I talk about, they just come to you, they happen. And that's really cool and awesome. Struggle, wanting them all the time, oh yeah, I want this, I want that. And when you sort of let go, that's when they come. Ajahn Chah's simile, sit under the mango tree. And he said, the mangoes, if you climb the tree, you never reach the mangoes, you shake the tree, nothing will fall, get a ladder, it's never high enough. Only one way to get the mangoes from the mango tree planted by the Buddha, and that's to sit perfectly still under the mango tree. Open out your hand and the mango will fall. This is an amazing, beautiful simile from Ajahn Chah. Sit perfectly still, open your heart, and all these wonderful states will just fall into you. That's how it works. You try shaking the mango tree, try to make it happen. That's hindrance, wanting. It means nothing will happen. Or ill will, getting frustration when it doesn't happen. Just sit there. And because you're not wanting anything, you don't not want anything, all of the restlessness disappears. Why are you restless? You want to be somewhere else. You want something to happen, you're planning it. How can I make sure that, you know, Ajahn Brahm bans that person next time, there's a person in my room or next door to snores every night really loudly. They should be banned. Or even better, we should have like the snorers identified and all put in the same cottage. Keep each other awake, I don't care, but not me. You start planning all these things. That is not the way to deal with the problem. Because you'll find that you'll go to that same cottage because you snore as well. So there's one of the monks. His brother was coming from Europe. And he asked me, can he stay in the monastery for a few days? I said, look, it's full. There's no place for anyone there. Even the cat has to stay outside. There's no place. And cat always stays outside, but it really is very full. So he said, well look, he's my brother, yeah, we can, you know, share the same room in the one of the kutis. He said, look at your age, I'm really sure your brother snores and probably you snore as well. I said, yeah, probably the case, he's my brother, I can deal with it. So I gave permission. And the following day, I asked, how did it go? And he said, my plan was to fall asleep first. So I sleep first, then my brother has to, he can't go to sleep and snore because he's kept awake with my snoring. Very practical, but not very compassionate. But it didn't work that way. His brother fell asleep first and started snoring really loudly. And I said, well, how do you deal with that? And he said, I remember that Ajahn Chah's teaching. It's not the noise disturbs you, you disturb the noise. So I was awake for a while, but then I thought, let's change my perception. Until the noise became like a modern symphony, cutting edge music. And when it became quite beautiful, when he didn't want to get rid of it anymore, that was the last thing he remembered when he woke up in the morning. He had a really nice night's sleep because he learned how not to react and get angry at the noise. That was a great example of overcoming hindrances. There was another fellow, I read this, that he was a traveller and he went to one of these cities, it could have been Jakarta, Medan or Hong Kong, and it was, every hotel room was booked. So he really needed somewhere to stay the night, so he went to one hotel. He got any free rooms here? I really need a place to stay, everything's booked up. And the hotel manager said, well, every room is taken, but there's one of the rooms, it's a double bed, sorry, no, two single beds, sorry, and the gentleman in there doesn't mind sort of sharing the room with another person. So, you know, you can sleep in the other bed if you don't mind sharing the room with this guy. He said, yeah, of course. But, said the manager, I'll have to warn you, no one has ever managed to go to sleep in that room because that guy snores so loudly. And the visitor said, no trouble, I can deal with that. So he took the room, and the following morning he came out of his room refreshed, and the manager said, did you get any sleep last night? I slept perfectly, I slept like a baby, no problem at all. How did you manage that? Because, you know, your friend in the room snores just like an elephant. Very easy, said this gentleman. Once I put on my pajamas, I went over to his bed, I kissed him on the cheek, and he stayed awake all night. That is using skillful means. So if you've got stuff what's snoring in your cottage, now you know what to do. Okay, I'll be going on too long now, again, usual. So anyway, so wanting, when you want too much, or ill will, that causes a restlessness. You can't stay still because you're not happy being here, you want to get somewhere else. And because you're restless, that tires you, which is why you get sleepy and dull. So it all comes from the wanting. That's the main hindrance of all. When you don't want anything, no ill will, this is good enough for me. Ajahn Brahm's stupid old jokes, yeah, that'll do for me. They could be better, they could be much better. I've heard it many times before, but there we go. And you don't get restless. Because you don't buy into restless, you don't get tired. So really peaceful. Four of those hindrances totally vanish. So you sit here, don't want anything. You get very peaceful. If you do go to sleep, it's just old karma. Because you didn't sleep well last night. Or, you know, just too hot, too cold. So you just let it be. Don't want anything. If you don't want anything, you let things be. You make peace with this moment, you're kind to it, and you're gentle. That's when you relax. And you find meditation is so easy when you don't want anything. When you want something, meditation is impossible. You destroy all your peace and contentment. So learn how not to want anything at all. And then you get a very dull mind at first, but it gets stronger and stronger and stronger by the minute. Until you're not wanting anything, and the mind really wakes up, and you really do have power. When you don't want anything, you have courage, nothing to lose. You don't look into the future where wanting finds its home, or wanting is projecting to some place in the future where you think you should be. Or anger, ill will is dwelling in the path that didn't like that. In the present moment, there's no wanting, no anger. It can't exist if you're really in the present moment. You're here. So you're just content to be here. Then you find peace and happiness. With a happy mind, peaceful in the moment, content, then your meditation really takes off. Deep states of mind. When you don't want anything, everything comes to you. Da da da. Okay, now we're going to do a guided meditation. Otherwise, I would have broken my promise to you. So, you'll sit down. It's only 15 minutes. Or thereabouts. Give or take. So, close your eyes. And just get yourself reasonably comfortable. Now I'm going to break the usual protocol and ask you to remember the past. The most happy, peaceful, content moment that you can recall. A time in your life, and maybe years ago, maybe when you were even a young man or a young girl, where you were so content, you didn't want anything in the whole world except just to be there. You had no place to go, nothing to achieve, no one to impress, nothing to prove. Could be alone somewhere, or with some best friends, maybe enjoying a sunset, or by some ocean or mountain. Time of not wanting anything, contentment, peace. Once you recall that time, fill in the details. Where exactly on this planet was it? What time of the day? Or was it night time? Who was around you? What was the temperature? What was the season? Was it summertime or spring or winter? What was the sky like? Were you in a forest or could you see the sky? Was there grass or were you inside a house or a mountain somewhere? What was around you? What was the time of day? What were you wearing? Filling in the details serves to reinforce the memory and the feeling of the most peaceful moment you've ever had in your whole life. And why was it peaceful? Why was it so much happiness there? Not the happiness of being in a party and laughing and jumping up and down, but a very serene, peaceful, inner happiness. You can actually feel some of that happiness now. The happiness of not needing anything more. Of being able to rest content, fulfilled in this moment. Feeling complete. Nothing needed. Nothing wanted. The most peaceful moment of your life ever. And when you remember it, when you recall it, some of that peace is present right now. Maybe not as intense and solid, but enough of an echo from your distant memory, so you can feel that peace, that contentment, not wanting anything in the whole world, just being here, nothing to complete any gaps, nothing required. You've come home, peace, a taste of freedom. Not wanting. And I'm going to leave you there. And I'll ring the bell in about 10 minutes' time. to leave.
Okay. Have any interviews? It's been a nice, peaceful time. Not wanting anything in the world.
Very good.